Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and nothing says love like the warmth and comfort of a Miki Couture blanket. Whether it's for your sweetheart, your best friend, or even yourself, Miki Couture has the perfect gift to make hearts melt. From luxurious textures to stylish designs, Miki Couture blankets are the ultimate way to show you care. Plus, now through Valentine's Day, enjoy exclusive savings on our limited edition Valentine's collection. Visit any of our stores or shop online at www.mikicouture.com and give the gift of love, comfort, and warmth this Valentine's Day. Miki Couture, blanketing the world in warmth and love.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Can't believe it's that time already, but we're starting with our Know Your Foe episodes. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the Kansas City Chiefs. Joining us to do that is Matt Lane of the Kansas City Sports Network. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Ken. Thank you for having me back. We know we did one of these last year for the playoff matchup coming up, and I was excited when you sent me a question, asked me if I wanted to come back on, because I love getting to come on, talk about little Chiefs to some other fan bases that might not be as familiar and stuff. And like you said, I can't believe it's time. Like, we've had college football's been going in the full swing right now, and then we got the NFL season less than a week away. It's like, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, so we've certainly waited a long time. It's been a long camp this year in terms of very hot here in Baltimore, and for the most part anyway. And anyway, looking forward to a new Ravens season, another opportunity to wipe the slate clean from last January 28th in what was otherwise a great Ravens season. But let's talk about the Chiefs here a little bit. Talk about the offseason a little. Let's start there. What were the Chiefs' biggest moves, aside from the draft? We'll get to the draft in a moment.
I think the biggest changes for the Chiefs, realistically, so I mean, like, you can look at the roster moves, like the loss of L'Jarius Sneed at cornerback. That's going to be a big one the Chiefs are going to have to try to overcome. You know, you said they're going to talk about the draft. They did try to bring in help to important positions there. But I mean, for the most part, it's a lot of the same team. The biggest changes, though, are like functionally, like scheme down, top down. They kind of are trying to revamp the offense to be something entirely different than what it was last year. And then you can see that in the moves they've made. You know, they go out and they sign a Hollywood Brown. They go out and draft Xavier Worthy. And then through training camp, through the preseason, it's kind of been paramount to them to work a lot more on the vertical passing game, because I think they felt they got way too one-dimensional as an offense, both just passing the ball and a lack of running game last year. So they went out this offseason, and I think some other fan bases might be kind of surprised when they see the Chiefs this year and just how it looks different than it has these last 2 years. And that's kind of funny, is they win two Super Bowls, but they're really working on trying to change up how the entire offense is structured. So the focus hasn't been as much on players in, players out, as much as offensively. I think they're trying to go through a little bit of an identity adjustment, because they did not like how the offense had to struggle up and down all last season.
All right, let's talk about the draft for starters, because I think the Ravens and Chiefs had fates that were kind of intertwined in the draft, particularly over Kingsley Suamataia, who I really coveted for the Ravens. But I wanted to talk about the first round pick, of course, first. So let's talk about Xavier Worthy.
That's the big one. And I get it right off the bat. Let's just start. Xavier Worthy's a small guy. He's a pretty slender fella. And that is going to present some unique challenges in the NFL. And I think everybody knows that, everybody acknowledges it, but then we have to take a step back and look at who is the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's Andy Reid. Andy Reid kind of has a long history of making very slender, very fast wide receivers kind of work in the NFL. So if there was a perfect place for someone like Worthy to go to, it's the Chiefs to get the most out of him. And I really do think that they're excited for him. by all accounts, he's been a very smart player. You can even go ask, you know, Steve Sarkisian at Texas. He picked up the offense really well there. He has in Kansas City. They've been showcasing him every chance they get in the preseason, during training camp. And like, they're putting him out there with the starters. He's not taking any second team reps all offseason long. He is going to be a guy that's going to factor in. And to start the year, it might be a lot of just situational stuff, a lot of vertical passing. They're using him for one specific goal. But I do think that his idea of what they want him to be is going to continue to grow as the season goes on. But I mean, week one, they're going to come out and try to weaponize his speed. And they got a coaching staff and a quarterback that really do know how to do that. So I think it'll be interesting to see, is his size going to be too limiting for him in the NFL, like early on in his career? Or is that speed just going to play because Andy Reid's constantly going to be able to protect him? But I think within the building, they're pretty excited about what he offers, just because very few guys can move as fast as he does on a football field.
So now with Marquise Brown, who obviously the Ravens know well and is a very small guy as well, that's really going all in on speed and not size.
It really has been. And it's a little surprising, I think, to do both of them back to back. But Hollywood Brown's, it's a 1 year deal in Kansas City. It doesn't look like they are expecting him to be in Kansas City for more than just this season. Maybe things change as the year goes on, as contract negotiations ramp up next year. But it seems like he might have been more of, this is an opportunity for us right now. I do know they were kind of interested in, one, getting him from the Ravens the first time he was available for trade. Then two, when he was coming up and the Cardinals were considering trading him, they were in talks with them again as well. So he's a guy that they've been interested in for a while. They finally get a chance to bring him around. I will think, though, they're going to use the two a little differently. It doesn't seem like Hollywood Brown has been predominantly a vertical guy for the Chiefs throughout training camp. And I know he only got one preseason play before he got hurt, but they used him a lot more as an outside wide receiver to beat zone coverage, to work kind of over the middle of the field. And you kind of go back with the Cardinals and look at his, you know, advanced analytics and stuff. That's kind of where he won. He'd be, you know, pretty good against zone. It's a lot more intermediate stuff than just downfield. So I think they were planning on using the two a little differently as is, but it definitely is a little noticeable how small they went to these two new receivers here.
So the Chiefs have also been a team I associate with a lot of gadget plays, and particular speed players, extremely useful for that in terms of threatening space in other ways. Are both Worthy and guys and Brown guys who would be used for gadget plays, whether that means jet motion, wide receiver screens, things like that, or are they guys who they really want to expand the vertical passing game more with and have that be their primary responsibility?
I think Worthy would be the guy that they would put in those situations a little bit more than Brown, especially now that we're already dealing with Hollywood Brown coming off of, you know, the clavicle injury here and going to miss the first couple games as is. So I do imagine Worthy would be the guy that they are going to put into the jet motions, into the screens and things like that. Now, neither guy obviously is very good at breaking tackles. Oddly, Hollywood Brown in his NFL career, like his explosiveness, his speed hasn't manifested as a great yards after catch guy. It's been first contact kind of brings him down pretty routinely, whereas Worthy in college was a little better at generating it just because he's a different level of fast. So if of the two, I think he would be the guy that gets a lot of that. But on the flip side, I think Rashee Rice is still going to get a lot of the manufactured screens, little pop passes and stuff like that, because he is so good with the ball in his hands. For what you lose in speed, you gain and like the ability to break tackles and to shrug guys off. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of the lead guy for the majority of those, you know, lack of better term, gadget type plays.
All right. How about other key injuries going into this game other than Brown?
Justin Reed is going to be just coming back. I believe he is on track to play this game, but he suffered, you know, a quad injury that kept him out of the majority of training camp and all of the preseason. So that's kind of like their leader and the secondary. He's played mostly strong safety for them. So he's the safety they like to kick down into the box, the one that handles a lot of the communication. It sounds like he's going to be ready to play, but who knows what kind of rust he might be knocking off for this game. And then Nick Bolton, their middle linebacker, also suffered an injury during the, you know, offseason or the training camp process here. Again, I think he's going to be ready to play, but who knows if he's going to be knocking off a little bit of rust once the time comes.
I always like to look ahead in terms of cap situation for the Chiefs here. It looks like in pretty good situation, honestly, for 2025. 2024, dealing what is typical for a contending team, $5-6 million under cap, just enough to get through the season with your transactions. 25, they've got a little bit better situation, but they're not dealing with a ton of excess fat that they can work with. Are there some players that can be cut to create cap room next year?
I think so. If you come out of this season and somebody like Jawan Taylor maybe didn't take the step forward and go back to playing like he did his final year in Jacksonville 2 seasons ago, he's a guy you have to start having some conversations about. At that point in time, I think Joe Tooney's contract also becomes one that you can shed if you no longer want to continue to pay an aging veteran guard and you have someone to replace him. But outside those two guys, I think that's kind of the end of the guys that are getting a substantial amount of money that they might be able to move on from at that point in time without taking too much of a dead cap hit. They have done, though, overall a pretty good job of, they're clearly trying to go for, you know, the three-peat here. They're trying to go for 3 Super Bowls in a row. It's very much a win now ideology around the team right now, but they're not sacrificing the future. They're not going completely all in. They are not going to abandon the 2025, 6, 7 season because they're still going to have Patrick Mahomes. They're still going to have Andy Reid. They know there's always a chance to win the Super Bowl. So they're going to continue to kind of flirt along that line of, we're trying to do the best we can this year, but we're also always going to have that one eye to the future. So I think this is probably one of their better, going into 2025, will be one of their better cap situations that they've had over the past few seasons.
You know, I always appreciate that as a season ticket holder, that my team is not sacrificing the future. And I really don't appreciate it to have people suggest that we got to win it now, because what it really means is you want to devalue my season tickets at some later point. You want to take that away from me. So anyway, I get very upset about that. Let's move on. Talk about the offense a little bit. Talk about Patrick Mahomes. What's different, if anything, about Patrick Mahomes coming into 2024?
So the big, and it's been more of a 2-year transition, I don't think, than like just this past season. But here's a guy that, starting his career, he could do whatever he wanted on the football field because not a lot of teams were ready for it. And then his teams got ready for it. He was just a little better than they were. You know, they were able to throw the ball down the field. They essentially weaponized that deep over concept, the deep over route, better than anybody ever had. And it took teams a while to catch up on how to slow it down. And then by the time they did, the Chiefs had more wrinkles. And here's Mahomes playing out of structure, kind of playing however he wants to play football, and it's working. And then they hit a few, you know, speed bumps along the way, and he has to change his game. So we see the trading away of Tyreek Hill, and then they bring in these new wide receivers, and they just essentially play the most efficient brand of football you've ever seen and beat teams by 1,000 paper cuts. Then last year, they try to go in and do the same concept, but the wide receivers aren't as good. Things just aren't going perfectly. Teams are challenging them to go back and winning different ways. And it took them essentially 18 weeks of the regular season to kind of figure out how to do it, but he got there. He started to understand what he did. So the biggest change I think you've gotten just over these past couple seasons from him is, I don't think there's one style of football that Mahomes has to play to win a football game. Whatever the avenue is to win a football game, when you put it on his shoulders, he's going to find a way to do it. He's going to, you know, whether it's throwing the ball deep, it's using his legs, if it is going to be scrambling and making plays or taking the safe 5-yard pass over and over again, he is just at a point where he is seeing everything. He is doing what needs to be done. And the biggest thing that happened last year to him is he was mentally challenged by mistakes on his own team, not necessarily from him, but from a lot of wide receivers, from the offensive line. There was not a lot of assistance, and he got so very frustrated. And it was kind of crazy that the only time that really showed up for everyone was in the Buffalo Bills game, like after the game, because he was frustrated all year long, just at his wit's end with some of the stuff going on. And I think that was a big part of coming into this year. They knew they had to get some help. He wasn't going to just mentally be able to handle that for an entire, maybe he could, but they didn't want to make him handle that again for an entire season of stuff like that. So I think he's just at the point right now where they feel like, hey, he's going to make a lot of stuff work, but let's give him some help to do it so not everything's on his shoulders, even if he knows how to figure that out.
Fantastic. Let's move on to the offensive line a little bit and talk about the current state of that. So take people through. I know people are aware of what Jawan Taylor's penalty issues, but please take us through one position at a time.
Yeah, so we'll start with the right tackle. You know, we got Jawan Taylor there at right tackle. He's definitely the starter. He got a lot better as the year went on, just in terms of his play. There was still some penalty issues, but I think it really got in his head early last year that the alignment stuff, the getting off the snap early, like it really bothered him. And I think threw off his timing while he's learning a new offense and he's playing next to it right guard, Trey Smith, a new player. So I think Juwan Taylor should be better this year. I don't know if he's ever going to be a great right tackle for the Chiefs, but what he does well in pass protection with the quick feet and being kind of a finesse blocker works well for what they like. He just definitely started last year slow, ended on a little bit of a higher note. So I think the Chiefs are hoping he carries that into this season. Then moving next, like I said, Trey Smith's the right guard. He's young. They're in contract negotiation talks now, so we will see if that deal gets done. But he's probably coming off of his worst of his three seasons in the NFL, and it was just because it was inconsistent. And maybe that's due to playing new next to a new right tackle in Juwan Taylor. But with Trey Smith, I mean, you get a physical, mauling right guard. He seems to play his best against the best competition. So when he goes up against, you know, for a lack of better words, just other defense, normal, regular defensive tackles, he kind of plays up and down. The better the competition gets, usually the more he steps up, but he's in a tricky spot because he would like to be pressing on defensive tackles. He would like to run the ball more. That's not what the Chiefs love to do. So his play can be a bit inconsistent. You can get really high highs. You can get really low lows out of Trey Smith. Next to him at center's Creed Humphrey, the epitome of consistency. I don't really have a lot of holes to poke in his game. There's a reason he just got paid as the highest, you know, paid center in the NFL right now. He's good all the time. And the one issue he had last year was some poor snapping. He worked on it all offseason. He's actually changing his grip on the type of snap he goes. He's now going to the dead ball snap. And so far, it has gone well, according to Mahomes and him. At left guard, Joe Tooney.
Can you explain what the dead ball snap is?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's a couple different types of snaps for centers, but for the most part, like most people see a snap and it comes from a center in the shotgun going to a quarterback is going to look kind of like a long snap, but the ball is going to come back in a little bit of a spiral. Centers are going to hold the ball almost like they're trying to throw it from the, like you would throw it from the nose. They're going to throw it between their legs with a little spiral to it to the quarterback. The dead ball snap, you kind of hold it a little bit more vertical. So you're holding the ball on the tip while the other tip's kind of on the ground. And when you snap it back, it just kind of floats flat like a knuckleball back to the quarterback. And some centers like it, some centers don't. But realistically, you're just reducing the spin. The velocity on it's usually a little lower. So some quarterbacks don't like that the ball is going to get to them, you know, a fraction of a second sooner. But if you can control the aiming point a little better, because that is something that Creed Humphrey did have an issue with last year, I think they'll sacrifice that fraction of a second so he can be a little bit more accurate with it.
Okay. All right. Very good. I think we've Ben Cleveland, who might start for the Ravens in this game at center, depending on Linderbaum's availability, has been using a kind of a vertical snap as you're describing. I imagine it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's real popular in college. It probably stems from high school, but it's gotten popular in college again over the past few years. And I think it's the same concept is you're getting more and more undersized centers. A lot of times that, not that these guys are, but like you have coaches that have more undersized centers. It's easier to teach them how to hold the ball if they happen to have smaller hands this way and just kind of flip it back there versus a pretty snap at all times. So I think it's becoming more and more popular. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it become increasingly popular at the NFL level going forward.
All right. Fair enough. We were on Joe Tooney. Talk about him and then the left tackle.
Joe Tooney is returning from a torn pec that he suffered last season. He is going to play. It seems like he's all ready to go in this game, but this will kind of be his first action. I don't know. Joe Tooney's been around for a long time. He's been an all-pro guard for a long time. I don't know if you have many concerns about him having the knockoff rust that you might some other guys, but it will be his first real action, first live action of the year. So that is just worth noting. But Joe Tooney is still one of the best guards in the NFL. Again, very consistent, never going to overpower anybody with his size, strength, maybe not even be the most fleet of foot guard, but he just rarely loses a rep. He's always in the right spot. And that's really good to have because next to him is a second round rookie, Kingsley Suamataya out of BYU, who has essentially been unchallenged all training camp long for the Chiefs to be the starting left tackle. They told everybody it was a position as a competition between him and last year's third round pick, Wanya Morris. It was never really a competition. They wanted Kingsley to win this job from the get-go, but he also played himself into it. And if you kind of watched him the first week of training camp, and then you watched him the last week of training camp or in the preseason, you could see he was getting a lot better. He was improving relatively rapidly. And that's been all the things that Andy Heck, the offensive line coach, or Andy Reid have said is you teach him something, he retains it, he uses it. He's not a guy that you have to go over with stuff multiple times before it starts to translate to the field. So they know there will be growing pains. I just think they feel like by the end of the season, he will be at a point that is very acceptable for them and probably an improvement over what they had last year in Donovan Smith.
All right. Now, Suamate, an interesting, I have a different pronunciation of it. That's okay. He's a different, he's a player that's intertwined with the Ravens. The Ravens wanted him. I wanted him for the Ravens, even in the first round. But Nate Wiggins was available. That pick made a lot more sense. Yeah. But at 62 and 63, the Ravens and Chiefs were again drafting back-to-back. The Ravens drafted Roger Rosengarten out of Washington. I don't know if he'd been the fallback position for the Chiefs to that pick or not. But Suamataia would have been the guy I definitely would have wanted there. Can you kind of handicap this for me a little bit? Suamataia, a bigger, lengthier player. How has his anchor looked so far in the preseason?
So I want to start real quick with like the draft night. It was really interesting to me that the Ravens went the Rosengarten path. And then there was like word coming afterwards that the Chiefs also may have, and I can't say this is for sure or not, except I find it a hard pill to swallow that they would have liked Rosengarten more than Suamataia. But both teams, the Ravens and the Chiefs, generally like bigger, longer offensive tackles. So just hearing both teams potentially having Rosengarten hired was a little surprising to me, but you know, a lot of good play on him and on film from him at Washington. So we will see how those picks pan out going forward. I just thought it was interesting that both these teams that predominantly like big, long offensive tackles were considering a guy that has a little bit shorter arms and a different profile. And then on to Kingsley. The anchor is definitely something he struggles with, and more so than just being the raw strength, it's just his hands are usually carried too low and too wide. So when he gets his hands fitted properly, when he gets them in the right place and a defensive player doesn't get into his chest first, the anchor is completely fine. He has no problem getting up underneath guys, holding his own, lifting them up to slow down any bull rushes or anything like that. However, because he likes to carry his hands relatively low and kind of wide, and again, this is like a newer common thing for offensive tackles in college, so that they can use different hand techniques, he does allow guys to get into his chest a little too frequently, and that can knock him back. And then because he's a taller guy, he can struggle to re-anchor once he gets there. And so he really gives up ground in the pocket when that happens. That is something the Chiefs have been working on him with throughout training camp, but it is something that you are probably going to see throughout his first year, maybe a couple years in the NFL, is that he's got to work on his hand timing if he is going to play with his hands in that spot, and he can't let defenders get into his chest as often.
I, by the way, definitely very similar characteristics in terms of a lot of ground given up in the pocket. The Ravens, by the way, have been fine with that over the Lamar years at left tackle. Ronnie Stanley's been a guy who's had a great mirror, and he's been able to give ground and very effectively, because Lamar takes bump pressure from that side extremely well, floats around the pocket, you know, with great ease. But the issue I have with Rosengarten relative to Suamataia, the Chiefs have obviously made the decision to go with him right off the bat. And I think it makes a lot of sense always to do that. The upside you get from that potential selection is terrific, but also it helps you make decisions for the future. And it's going to help them make a decision potentially about Juwan Taylor. In Baltimore, Roger Rosengarten hasn't yet been given the job. We may see him there on Thursday night. We may see him just rotationally on Thursday night. We might see just Patrick McCary being the starting right tackle on Thursday. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But the Ravens need to know what Rosengarten is before 2025 to decide what they do about Stanley. I think the Chiefs' decision to go with Suamataia earlier rather than later is very progressive.
Yeah, and I think that's been a big that was a big part of it too. I also can say, like, I don't think the coaching staff was overly impressed with their third round pick last year in Wanya Morris. He was giving some opportunities to start during the regular season when Donovan Smith got hurt, and it started out okay, but it kind of quickly deteriorated and wasn't great. And it just doesn't sound like they were in love with some of the practice habits or, you know, the way it was going in the offseason before that and afterwards. So they knew they wanted to bring in talent to the tackle spot. And I think they were very happy that they were able to get who they got in the second round, because they felt like they could get him to a point to where by the playoff run, by the Super Bowl, hopefully Kingsley will be playing at a level that they can win with. And, you know, they've won a couple Super Bowls without great tackle play, so they feel pretty confident and making up for that with strong interior offensive line play, with Patrick Mahomes, who, similar to Lamar Jackson, can handle some tackle pressure, especially off that. If you're going to let him roll to the right a little bit and get away from the left tackle spot, he's okay with that. He's okay being flushed out to the right. He's okay ducking underneath his left tackle if they get beat up the arc and working back underneath it to the left. So things like that, I feel like they're okay with. So they are going to deal with those growing pains, but I'm sure there will be some, because he's a 2 year starter at offensive tackle. Kingsley is here. He's just now moving back or staying on the left side after only one season there. And he's coming from a relatively air raid type system to now go play in an Andy Reid play or scheme. There's going to be growing pains and they know that. It's just, I think they have a lot of confidence with him playing next to Joe Tooney and with Patrick Mahomes behind him after what they saw from Donovan Smith last year.
All right. All right. Outstanding. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about the wide receivers. Go through what they each bring to the offense.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about Xavier Worthy off the top, and the big thing there, so he is gonna run. I don't know if everybody remembers, but Tyreek Hill put a lot of pressure on defenses because he just never stopped running, whether it was just motions behind the line of scrimmage during a play, pre-snap, then he ran vertically. Teams were tired of having to chase him around come fourth quarter. I think the Chiefs are really going to do that to Xavier Worthy. They are going to make defenses run to try to keep up with him all game long. And yeah, teams will get physical with him, but that one time that you maybe slip up, the one time you maybe missed a bump or anything like that, he does have the kind of speed that is just gone and breaks recovery angles from safeties and stuff. So I am intrigued to see how the NFL responds to his speed, because last year teams were kind of daring the Chiefs to throw the ball downfield because they were really bad at it. And this year the Chiefs want to be better. I am going to be interested to see how all teams, but especially the Ravens in week one, decide, are they going to challenge the Chiefs to throw it vertical again? Is Kyle Hamilton going to routinely be coming up to the box? Will they give a few more open windows downfield to try to close down the middle of the field intermediate zones on Travis Kelce, on Rashee Rice, who made up the entire offense last year? So that's going to be the biggest thing I want to see from the get-go.
Yeah, I think just to address that for a second, I think one thing that the Ravens did very effectively last year, yep, for all the regular season anyway and through the first playoff game, was to show a too high shell. And it really made the job easier for a lot of their underneath cornerbacks. This side, this year, the underneath cornerbacks are very talented. I think they'll stay with the too high shell because it's good. But that also means that Hamilton on the majority of downs will probably be the slot corner, which has tremendous impact on the strong side of the field in terms of tackles getting broken and that getting taken away. Do you think the Chiefs have a specific way to attack that?
They're going to have to. Hamilton coming off, the bringing pressure off the slot, off the edge in that playoff game last year was a big problem for them. That was one of the few, a couple of the few times that Patrick Mahomes like got by a defensive play call last year was against the Ravens, against the Kyle Hamilton making some plays and coming off the edge. So they're going to have some answers for what he is able to do there. I know last year they were able to kind of figure it out. The offense really kind of stunk after the first couple drives. This year, though, I think they're going to be relying on the speed of a Worthy. Hollywood Brown's not there. In a perfect world, they'd have him, but they'd be relying on some of that speed to create more space, more zone space for Kelce, more space for Rashee Rice to get going, because teams had a lot of success just kind of muddying up stuff underneath. Now, to your point, if the Ravens are able to live in too high and take away that vertical ball, I think the Chiefs are okay with it because they still trust Andy Reid to scheme up ways to get Rashee Rice the ball in space. They trust Travis Kelce to run those fake called routes where he just goes and finds space and sits down. They'll be on the same page. They feel like they will be able to do enough of that kind of stuff throughout any matchup, but they are really going to rely on Worthy and Brown to stretch defenses out, give a little bit more space in there, and hopefully the run game gets going a little bit well. So now you're attacking a defense on all three levels. Last year, the only offensive attack they had was the short passing game. This year, they want to be able to throw it deep. They want to be able to run and continue to throw it short. And I think the Ravens did a great job of saying, we know what you're doing last year. They just muddied up that kind of short to intermediate area, and the Chiefs didn't have any answers for it.
All right, let's move on to the running backs and Isaiah Pacheco. Actually, let's talk tight ends first before we go to the running backs.
Yeah. So Travis Kelce's the guy. It's week one, so I think overall throughout the regular season, Travis Kelce is going to see less usage. He is going to be used on third downs and pivotal moments. But I think this will be the year where the Chiefs really try to cut back on some of how much they've relied on him in the past. Now, it being week one, I don't know if that's the case. And really with the Chiefs starting with the Ravens and then the Cincinnati Bengals back to back, maybe they do kind of play those two games as not must wins, but they might not just think that they are throwaway regular season games that they can use to tune up for the playoffs, given it's two teams you expect to be in that number one seed race. So you could still get a full-on Travis Kelce usage and performance, But if not, you know, let's say they don't. Let's say they are resting him. They have bolstered a tight end room. They have Noah Gray, who's going into his fourth year, who's been a very good second tight end for them. He does a little bit of everything, you know, a little bit of a pass catching. They move him around as an H-back. They use him in line a little bit. They draft Jared Wiley out of TCU, a supremely athletic tight end that can stretch down the middle of the field. I don't know how much he...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
He's going to play early on. He does struggle with physicality a little bit coming from the Big 12, being a little bit 6'6", but only 245-ish pounds. So he can be gotten by physicality, but they also went out and traded for Peyton Hendershot from the Dallas Cowboys. Not a massive player, but a guy that is willing to work in line as a tight end. So like they did last year, the Chiefs will go 13 personnel a decent amount. I think they were one of the top five teams in terms of how often they went into 13 personnel. They were very effective out of it down the stretch last year. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them dip into that as well, just because they have made sure they have a stable of tight ends that they feel like they're all capable of being on the field at any given time.
Without going into this in any greater degree, I'll just say it's been absolutely evident at camp in terms of how the Ravens have prepared for this game that they are keyed in on Travis Kelce having a pretty significant role.
Yeah, no, they should. Every team really, really should. And I think, like I said, with the first 2 weeks being the significant AFC, you know, contenders for the number one seed, he might come out and play his traditional 80-85% of the snaps. But once we get, you know, at the end of the regular season, I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of his just lower usage seasons compared to the past. I mean, he's getting older now. He had the knee injury to start last year's regular season. They really didn't wait until the playoffs to ramp him up. I wonder if they don't just continue to go that route to preserve him a little bit for that stretch run, but to start the season healthy this year for him, which is key, and it being the Ravens followed by the Bengals, he might just come out on fire right away. And I think the Ravens would be very smart to go ahead and game plan for that rather than get caught not prepared.
All right, very good. So running backs, Isaiah Pacheco, who joins him in the backfield this year? So
Isaiah Pacheco is going to be their lead back. They have an undrafted free agent out of UCLA, Carson Steele, who's kind of a fullback slash running back. He made the squad. He was very impressive, during training camp and the preseason. The Chiefs have had a fullback. Andy Reid has had a fullback on his roster almost every season until the past two. Last year. And I don't think that they liked how that impacted their short yardage rushing game. They really do like to get a fullback dive involved. They do like to use the fullback to kick out a defensive end as they try to run downhill on third and fourth and short, because they are not allowed to run a quarterback sneak anymore after Mahomes dislocated his knee the one time. So they really do like to utilize a fullback there, and they didn't have one last season. So they get a bigger running back coming from college. So he's going to play some snaps. I don't know how many, but the biggest move was they went out and signed Samaje Perine, who was cut by the Denver Broncos. He's been one of the best third down running backs in the NFL the past couple seasons, and the Chiefs had been relying heavily on Jerick McKinnon in that role for these last couple Super Bowls. he kind of has aged out. I don't even think he's on a team right now. The Chiefs decided to go a different route, get somebody a little younger. But Perine, they hope he is going to be up to speed and ready to play in week one. So we'll have to fully see on that. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him get the majority of the third down running back reps because he is a very good blocker. He is a dynamic pass catcher out of the backfield. He's consistent at it. And those are things that Isaiah Pacheco, I haven't mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire yet because his status is up in the air. He hasn't practiced for a few weeks dealing with some PTSD that stems from an incident back in college at LSU. So I'm not sure if he's going to be active or ready to play in this game, but they are really hoping that Samaje Perine is able to come in, be that third down back and spell Isaiah Pacheco a little bit because Isaiah Pacheco does like to run so hard. He probably doesn't need to get every single rep possible.
Can you give us a little more detail on the CEH situation? What happened in college? Yeah.
So in college, him and a buddy, I believe somebody had attempted to rob them while they were in a car, and it resulted in a shootout in which the person that tried to rob them did die. And so he was, you know, doesn't get charged with anything. He was found, it was completely in self-defense, but he's missed some time during training camp with PTSD. And it's something that they're not 100% sure when he is going to be ready to be back with the team doing full-on football activities right now. So it's been a little ambiguous about what his state is going to be going into the year.
Okay, interesting. All right, let's move over to the defense and talk about some things. What I usually like to start with on the defense is what do the Chiefs like to present as a third down pass defense look? Are they a committed nickel team? Do they move to a dime? What do they do?
So it's going to really depend on like down and distance, but in the past, Steve Spagnuolo has wanted to get as many defensive backs on the field as he can, as often as he can. And then because they have had such good slot defenders, whether that's been a safety or Trent McDuffie playing as a nickel corner, they can go with some very exotic pressure packages. So they're going to show you all these different looks. You're not really ever going to be sure who's going to be rushing and who isn't, but they want to get as many defense and third down, get as many defensive backs out there as we can. They're going to move Chris Jones around to find his preferred matchup along that offensive line, whether that's him outside at the end, whether that's him at nose tackle, him as a three tech, they'll move him around. They're going to try to scheme up the pressure looks to force pass protection to give Chris Jones a one-on-one, and they might bring pressure with it. They might not, but the whole goal is to kind of speed up the opposing quarterback and then give Chris Jones his ability to win that rep for them.
All right. Very good. Let's talk about rotation, depth, snap management on the defensive line. Starting with that, what does the line look like?
Yeah, so the defensive line, the big thing there to start with is Charles Omenihue did tear his ACL last year. So he's out until at least November. So that is another injury. They will be without Charles Omenihue to start the season. He won't be able to be here. And that's kind of a big deal for them because he was arguably their best pass rushing defensive end last year while healthy. Him and George Karloftis kind of shared that role. So George Karloftis is in there. He's playing one defensive end spot. Him and Chris Jones are their top two players. That's kind of the basis of everything. And Karloftis is really developing into his own, good against the run. He's getting better as a pass rusher. He's kind of more of a high effort motor power guy, but he's starting to put together some quick wins in the NFL now. So he's really coming along. I think they're expecting a bit of a breakout year in terms of him as a pass rusher. We talked about Chris Jones. The nose tackle spot for the Chiefs is whatever player happens to be in the rotation right now, it's going to be a combination of Derek Nnadi, Mike Pinnell. On third downs, they'll bring in Tershawn Wharton, who's a little bit more undersized, but it's just not a position that they've prioritized. They want a bigger body guy over 300 pounds to just kind of hold some space in the middle and take pressure off the linebackers, take pressure off Chris Jones. So that position is just, it's going to be a guy that is going to go out there. You probably won't notice him too often on a good day. On a bad day, that can be one of their biggest weaknesses, and it can allow teams to have a lot of success running the football up the middle. And then the opposite defensive end is going to be Mike Dana. He just got re-signed to the Chiefs after being a free agent. He has worked his way into a very solid starting defensive end. But on third downs, he's a guy that they would like to come off the field a little bit more frequently or reduce to be an interior rusher because he's not the most dynamic pass rusher. They tried to help out the room by going out and training for Cameron Thomas from the Arizona Cardinals. We'll see how much he plays. You know, being a new addition to a team, he might not play a ton, but it's also a pretty thin defensive end room without Charles Omenihue. Second-year pass rusher Felix Anudike-Uzomah has not been overly promising. He was playing deep into the second and third preseason game against, third stringers and stuff. And he wasn't taking over the game. So they felt like they needed to go out and get some help for that position. So Cameron Thomas will also probably get some run as the kind of the third or fourth defensive end, even in this week one's game.
for other people out there, the reason I reacted to that, if you're playing towards the end of the last preseason game in particular, usually means you're going to be cut. But if you know, with a player like that, he's not going to be cut. They're dissatisfied with his play. Not good. Okay. So, you know, the Ravens tackle certainly one of the real question marks about this team, and having a, honestly, it's not just the tackles, it's the entire offensive line. So having a not the highest end pass rush opponent is probably a good thing. Talk about the off-ball linebackers now and what they do.
So the Chiefs lose Willie Gay to free agency this past year, but they bring back Drew Tranquil. So your starting linebackers are Nick Bolton, Drew Tranquil, and Leo Chenal. They were all here for Kansas City last year. And Steve Spagnuolo, like, he's going to do a lot of stuff. Like, a lot of it comes down to just Spags is really good at his job, and he finds a way to put these guys in the proper spots for their skill sets almost all the time. Leo Chenal is rarely going to be lined up in coverage against anybody who's significantly more athletic than him, unless it's a running back working out to the flat that he just has to mirror. Drew Tranquil isn't going to be, the guy going to be asked to take on a fullback in the hole all the time, because these just aren't strengths of those guys. They do a really good job of getting those guys to play to their strengths, but at the same time, they're all pretty smart players. Like Nick Bolton, for his limitations in terms of in pass coverage and his overall range, he is a very good leader. He plays physically and he has a knack for making big plays. He can shoot gaps downhill and he IDs stuff pretty quick. And a lot of big games, there's almost always a play or two that you see Nick Bolton make that really kind of pops and flashes, that not a lot of linebackers in the NFL can do that. Drew Tranquil's, I think, a little bit more consistent overall than Bolton is, and that's why I think they were very happy to have him come back. So overall, it's a solid group. It's a good group. They might be missing the complete athletic freak that was Willie Gay a little bit, but he was also easy to take advantage of by play action, by misdirection, because he was very much a see ball, get ball kind of linebacker. So I don't know. They might even be a little bit more schematically sound with these three guys that they have in there now.
Really love Chenal coming out of the draft in 22. And two down, thumper, I would have called him. I mean, he's 6'3", 250. So you rarely see that kind of a size currently. Trend is much smaller inside linebackers. Chenal looks to me like the kind of player who would at least put up a challenge to Derrick Henry in terms of level two first contact opportunities and whatnot. Tremendous drive-through tackler in college. Talk about his play a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, no. So Chenal is very good at that. And the Chiefs do a great job of keeping him near the line of scrimmage. So a lot of times last year, when he was the fourth linebacker, he was kind of the guy rotating in more. He would come in for certain looks, like when they would go to a 3-3-5 presentation. So three defensive linemen, three linebackers, five DBs. He would be a linebacker, but he would play as an overhang. So almost he would be lined up just like a defensive end or an outside linebacker. And they would trust him in that role. Or they would have him stepping up into the A-gap, but standing right on the line of scrimmage, and they're just trying to let him get going downhill. They're keeping him as close to the ball as they can, reducing how often he's in space, because I had mentioned that maybe Drew Tranquil doesn't, want to be taking on every fullback. Leo Chenal does. He is no problem taking on fullbacks, pulling guards. You can send, if the run fit has him taking on a tackle or a guard, I don't think the Chiefs feel like they are at a significant disadvantage in that situation, because he is just very powerful. He is able to shed blocks or at least hold his gap very, very well. And then, yes, as a tackler, he is a good, strong tackler. He will drive through ball carriers. So does Nick Bolton. I may not be as high on Nick Bolton as some Chiefs fans are, because I think there are limitations to him in space. But as far as a tackling goes, he is very good also at running through the hip of a ball carrier, getting them to the ground, and he gets to the point of contact with some force like Chenal does. So those two guys do make them a pretty good tackling force in the middle of the field.
All right. And let's talk about the secondary. And I go back to that January 28th game, and the Chiefs very effectively put that game in the hand of their cornerbacks, and that was, for my money, that's what won them the football game. Talk about this group, and I know Snead is gone. Snead had a fine year last year, but a lot of penalties.
So the L'Jarius Sneed for the Chiefs, he was very important. And I do think there's going to be a step back. And if you sit here, we're sitting here at the end of August and we're talking about what might be the downfall of the Chiefs, it could be the fact that not that they're missing L'Jarius Sneed per se, but that nobody stepped into his shoes. And so what I mean by that is, yeah, there was a lot of penalties and he was far from a perfect cornerback. However, a lot of his penalties were, you know, shorter variety. Yeah, he gives up first downs on them, but he wasn't getting beat. And so if the difference is he's allowed to go press a wide receiver for an entire game and has to sacrifice one or two penalties early in the game, 5-yard penalties, that maybe one's a first down or something that they wouldn't have had. But if they are able to sacrifice that first down early in the game to allow him play physical for the rest of the game and essentially, for the most part, not get beaten too badly, they were taking that risk. It's the old Seattle Seahawks philosophy of they're not going to call pass interference every yeah. single play. Let's just get it out of the way early, and that way we can keep going. So that's kind of how he played. And
the Richard Sherman mantra, by the way, you're not going to call it every time.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how Snead played. It was very good for the Chiefs, but now he's gone. So they will have to figure it out. And the issue isn't that they don't have somebody as talented as Legarius Snead. Trent McDuffie's now their cornerback one. I would have argued he was their better player last year as is, even though they played slightly different positions. Now he might play outside a little bit more than he did last year. It might not just be in base defense where he's playing outside. They might keep him outside at times and let somebody else step down into the slot. But that is it's a different size profile. Trent McDuffie is a lot smaller than Legarius Snead is. He's not quite as physical, even if he might be a better overall player. The issue is across from that. Now you're going to have Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson, who both played plenty last year, but now they have to play. Or Nazi Johnson, who's returning from an ACL injury, has to overtake one of those guys. He's been with the Chiefs for a couple years. He was going to be in competition for their third cornerback spot last year until he got hurt. So they have guys they're familiar with, guys that have played at high levels, that have won Super Bowls and played important roles for them. But now they can't rotate corner three with Williams and Watson. Those two guys are going to have to be on the field a ton. So that's going to be something worth monitoring.
I guess I'm a little surprised to hear you talk about Williams being a rotational player. To me, I mean, okay, that's if you got four great corners for three spots, no problem. I'll rotate Joshua Williams. But to me, Joshua Williams, clearly a starting cornerback in this league.
And so it's for him, it's really interesting because there is high end potential there. Like he has the physical traits, the size and the ability to be a starting corner. But the issue that has come up with him through his first 2 years in the NFL is there's just a few coverage lapses, a few breakdowns in coverage that seem to be not, I can't directly say without being in the room that they're on him, but they seem to be involving him and somebody else more frequently than other guys. So for that reason, when Jalen Watson is healthy, he was the guy that usually got the nod for the most part over Williams. Now, they both split snaps. They both are going to play. But when both are healthy, they seem to lean on Jalen Watson a little bit more because I think he just kind of had a better grasp of the overall defensive scheme that Spags wanted to play, probably a little better in zone coverage. And the Chiefs like to run a fair amount of zone coverage to help protect those guys. But this year, they're both going to be out there. And hopefully Williams takes that step. He's been the one that's been healthy for the majority of this offseason. The other guys, Watson's missed some time. Nazi Johnson's returning from an ACL injury. So hopefully Joshua Williams is ready to take that step. But so far, he has been unable to win and secure, like for sure, that cornerback two spot. It's been a competition for 2 years running now, and Watson had traditionally been winning it over the past two seasons.
Stick with Williams for 1 second with me. Does he have any problem finding the football in the air? I see over 300 coverage snaps, no interceptions, two touchdowns allowed, which is that you'd live with that any day of the week. Yeah. But in terms of finding the ball in the air, the Ravens have Jalen Armour-Davis, who's been a guy who has been able to run with wide receiver. Just he can't ever find the ball in the air, which means he often overruns the play late. What's Williams' problem with regard to ball production?
Yeah, it sounds like the same concept. Is he can be in position very well, but when it comes time to start hand fighting, turning his head, and then locating the ball, that's not where he's been at his best. He does a lot better when he just face guards a wide receiver, doesn't try to find the ball, plays their hands, and just tries to impact the catch versus playing for the football himself. And so he's gotten by with that. But teams every now and then will challenge him, and it has not always looked great. So, yeah, when he has to turn and find the ball vertically downfield, that has been a little bit of an issue for him. But he's learned, for the most part, to play the receiver and not the ball unless he's in a perfect position. And it's crazy because Trent McDuffie kind of has the same issue. Now, his is maybe arm length issue, seeming he has some of the shortest arms for any cornerback in the NFL. Jalen Watson a little bit has that issue, but I think he's broken the mold a little bit. the Chiefs don't have great ball production out of their cornerbacks. Even L'Jarius Sneed didn't have great ball production, especially compared to like his rookie season. He started off really hot in terms of getting interceptions, finding the ball, but it slowed down. And at any time you listen to Steve Spagnuolo or Dave Merritt, their defensive back coach, talk, they talk about ball production. They talk about ball disruption. It's just never been something that Chiefs cornerbacks in particular have ever excelled at kind of under those two guys.
All right. Great stuff here as you've taken us through the offense and defense. Let's talk about how the Chiefs respond to the Ravens in this game. So the Ravens present obviously some offensive challenges for any team with Jackson, Flowers, Andrews, and now Derrick Henry. How do you see them attempting to defend them differently than they might another opponent?
This is a tricky one because under Steve Spagnuolo and even Andy Reid, you can go back even a little bit farther to get some Derrick Henry stuff in there. The Chiefs have had a defensive game plan for the Titans with Derrick Henry, and they have had a different defensive game plan for Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. The two obviously have never met because they haven't been on the same team. So I don't know how exactly they're going to mesh those together. Against Derrick Henry in the past, the Chiefs have very much lived with playing the run almost all the time and living with, at the time, you know, Ryan Tannehill or Marcus Mariota beating them off of play action and throwing the ball and having those wide receivers for the Titans win, because their entire goal is to hit Derrick Henry at the line of scrimmage or in the backfield before he gets ahead of steam, because that is when he is the most vulnerable. I'm not going to say vulnerable, but the most vulnerable is before he gets ahead of steam. So they like to crash linebackers. They like to get safeties or nickel corners coming off the edge or stepping down to stop Henry before he gets ahead of steam. On the flip side, you can't really do that to Lamar Jackson. And against Lamar Jackson, they've kind of alternated between, we're going to bring a lot of pressure, or show we're bringing a lot of pressure, but then we're going to play coverage behind it. We're going to keep a lot of eyes on Lamar Jackson. We're going to play a lot of zone. We're going to try to keep him just corralled. We're just not going to try to give up the big play. We are going to keep everything right here in front of us and force them to move the ball down the field all the way without giving up the explosive plays. Now, I don't know if those two things are going to be able to saddle up well with each other at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see which one they decide to take away in this game and how they decide to go about it, which one are they willing to die by, so to speak, on the field.
It's really interesting discussion of those two philosophies against those players, because I think the threat of the Jackson-Henry mesh point will make or break the Ravens season. And I'm actually kind of lukewarm on the transaction in terms of, I don't like spending money on a running back, period. Lamar's, you know, created the greatest running game in NFL history with a bunch of guys who are not the, you know, Hall of Fame candidates. And if their success rates are off the charts, we look at what Henry did last year. You're absolutely right on the money that he got hit behind the line of scrimmage a lot in Tennessee. So people are keying on him, and they could do it effectively with Tannehill at quarterback. But I think the key has got to be, they can't go all the way into the mesh. It has to be the threat of the mesh, which causes more downhill read steps from those linebackers and creates that play action opportunity. That will be where the Ravens live or die this year, is can they really leverage Jackson and Henry into a lot of play action success?
And for sure. And something the Chiefs are pretty good at, you know, George Karloftis and Mike Dana, their two defensive ends, are both very good at handling some of the option stuff, handling the mesh point and quarterbacks pulling, or even just straight play action where they get left unblocked or blocked and released. Those two guys at defensive end are very good. They stay home and then pursue once they get a good clean read. So they are one of the better teams, I think, in a defensive end spot at handling something like that. But against two players as dynamic as Henry and Lamar Jackson, you can't be a second late. It'll still cause an issue. I wouldn't be surprised either to see the Chiefs throw, especially early in the game, a fair amount of run blitzes out there. They've always done that with Nick Bolton, and we talked about Leo Chenal a little bit. They will get those guys going on early down blitzes with the entire goal is just to kind of muck up the run game. They will probably live. Now, this is easier when you had L'Jarius Sneed out there too and not playing both Watson and Williams, but they will live with some of their one-on-one coverage or a guy lacking in coverage to send a run blitz out there to try to clog up some stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that early in this game either, to try to put pressure on the Ravens to win this game through the air, which we know they can. It's just, for the most of their meetings, the Chiefs have done a pretty good job against the passing attack. It's been when they get pushed around that they kind of start to struggle a little bit more.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Give me one player on each side of the ball for the Chiefs that you think matches up well against the Ravens. I don't ask for score predictions on this show, but I always like to hear that.
So I think Rashee Rice is going to be the guy for me. And I think we kind of were getting this direction earlier when you said that, you know, the Ravens were planning a lot for Travis Kelce and they trust their cornerbacks. It's a very good cornerback room, right? Like it's a lot of talented guys out there. They are going to let those guys go out there and play. If they're going to keep the safeties up top and try to protect against the deep ball a little bit and pay attention to Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice could be the guy that gets a little bit lost in the shuffle. And then you add in the fact that Andy Reid's good at scheming stuff up. I know that Patrick Queen had his ups and downs with the Ravens, but that was a very athletic player that is having to be replaced now. So you are losing that guy in the middle of the field next to Roquan Smith. So they might be able to find some space or manipulate some space for Rashee Rice to get going. And when he catches the ball on the move in particular, he is very deadly with the ball in his hands. So I think the goal of the Chiefs this entire year is, yeah, they want to hit some deep stuff over the top, but they really want to create space for guys like Kelce and guys like Rice to get going. And I think this might be a game where you see Travis Kelce, teams want to shut him down, that Rashee Rice could be flying under the radar still a little bit.
All right, very good. How about on the defensive side?
On the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to go with Trent McDuffie just for the simple fact that he's kind of got to be changing positions now. If they play him outside more frequently, he is going to be the clear-cut cornerback one, and I don't have an issue with that necessarily, but he's been so good in the slot throughout his career. I don't know if I like the idea of moving him out of that spot in particular. And in this game where I expect the Chiefs to blitz a fair amount, we already talked about the dangers of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, you know, at the mesh point and both being potential runners. I kind of like the idea of keeping Trent McDuffie in the slot because he is such a good run defender. He is such a game changer from that spot. And then when he is in coverage, him and Zay Flowers, when they get matched up on each other, that's going to be a fun matchup. I think it's two guys that both have similar body like movements. They move similarly. They're very quick. They're very fluid. They're able to get in and out of breaks very quickly. So he might kind of be a key cog in slowing down Flowers a little bit, but then also when he's in the slot, using him as a weapon to kind of disrupt the running game or the play action game.
Do the Chiefs chase with their corners usually or travel with their corners, or do they generally just play a set left corner, right corner, slot corner?
Last year, L'Jarius Sneed got to the point to where they did let him follow essentially big matchups. So he did follow matchups last year a lot, where then Trent McDuffie stayed predominantly in the slot when they went nickel, and then whatever the third corner was at the time went opposite of L'Jarius Sneed. I don't know if they will continue to do that this year without L'Jarius Sneed and with Trent McDuffie, especially because I don't know how they are going to handle the slot versus outside reps. Coming into the year, the idea was Chamari Connor, their third safety, was going to play a lot more in the slot because he flashed some in that last year. But with the injury to Justin Reed throughout the training camp, they didn't really get the opportunity to go out there and play a ton of the three safety looks. So we're a little in the unknown of how they are going to handle the corner rotation. I would think, though, if they are going to follow number one wide receivers, Zay Flowers is a matchup for Trent McDuffie that you would feel confident letting him follow, whereas you maybe go to another bigger wide receiver like a Jamar Chase, that's probably not where you want to put the smaller Trent McDuffie on him. So it could be matchup dependent a little bit more than it was last year when Sneed kind of followed whoever he chose to.
Okay. And who's the best choice to cover a good route runner? Would that be McDuffie also, or would it be one of the other guys?
Nah, it's definitely Trent McDuffie. He is by far their best cover corner. His biggest issue is just at the catch point because he just does have the short arms, and he has occasionally gotten lost trying to track a football up and over his shoulder. So we can go back to the Super Bowl versus the Eagles. He had an easy interception that he just misplayed, and AJ Brown catches a touchdown. There's been a few times that he has just gotten beaten by bigger wide receivers, you know, in the NFL level, that he can stay right in their hip pocket. He just doesn't always have the length to keep up with them. But normally when it comes to guys that are good route runners, that are quicker, shiftier, faster, he can stay with them very, very well. And more for deny the ball, when it stays in front of him, he is very good at driving downhill and producing pass breakups. It's just trying to play it over his shoulder versus size has been definitely been an issue for him.
Outstanding stuff, Matt. We appreciate you taking us through this. And why don't you tell people, first of all, where they can find your work, and then also if they want to talk football with you or ask you a question, where they can contact you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on again, Ken. I really appreciate it. My name is Matt Lane. I work for a company called KC Sports Network, and we cover all Kansas City-based sports. It includes, you know, NFL, college, baseball. For the most part, though, I'm just doing Chiefs and a little bit of college football. You can find anything that we talk about with the Chiefs on our YouTube page or wherever you download a podcast. That's just KC Sports Network. There's a bunch of different Chiefs shows on there. My particular show is called the KC Laboratory. And, you know, we have two and a half pods a week, depending on if there's games or not. So I do all my podcasts and stuff there. And then you can find me if you have a question for me and you really want to ask something about the Chiefs. You can find me on Twitter at Maddie_KCSN. I will have my DMs are open. I will happily answer questions, you know, that you might have about the Chiefs if it interests you.
Outstanding. Other picks out there. Want to remind people we're getting back to our regular schedule for the regular season, which means two defensive pods, two offensive pods. Know Your Foe will typically be coming out on Thursday or Wednesday, one of the two. Friday morning GM, of course, one last thing, and two matchup shows. So there'll be tons of Ravens content for you starting this week. And look for that, please. Matt, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.